in transformative fan created works is that the characters are already very established. Say you read something like this and it's about, I don't know, Bucky Barnes from the Marvel Cinematic Universe or from Marvel Comics, and you already know who Bucky is and you're already endeared to him and you know what he looks like, you know his story, so you don't need to even care about the character. You can just kind of revel in the pain. You can revel in this kind of alternate universe and the melodrama. But when it comes to actual self-created fiction, you have to establish an exposition first. Nobody knows about any of these characters. And for me, why A Little Life didn't resonate with me is that I just didn't really like Jude very much. He basically, throughout the entire book, he is a walking DSM-5. He just does every single thing. There's really not much of a plot because it's kind of just a non-linear narrative fiction about his life over the decades. Almost every single thing that happens in the book is driven by either his trauma or a response to his trauma. And once you strip away from that, there's really not much to him. I don't really know what he is like as a person. I just know he's kind of unlikable because, understandably so, he's dealing with so much trauma and so much pain that's unresolved. I know that he's very smart. I know that he likes to cook and he's kind of a kind person, but I don't really see why his friends like him so much. You know? If I met somebody like this, I don't know if I would be a very close friend of theirs.
You know what? I think maybe I would, because it's clear that Jude would never trauma dump on me. Ever.
Oh my God. Ever. You know what? I think another grab I had with this book that I just realized is that I just felt so sorry for him. If this was a real person, the fact that his friends didn't really stage an intervention. Like, they knew about his, they didn't know everything that happened to him, but they definitely, these are friends. His friend group is from college. So they were all like roommates in college. And I think from the very get-go, they know that there's something deeply, deeply wrong about him. And they just didn't even bother to stage an intervention until he was 50.
Wow.
What kind of friends are that? I would be extremely pissed off, I would say, if I were Jude and my friends didn't even, like, you know.
No, you wouldn't.
No one was like, you know, try some ketamine, dude. Like, okay. You know, not like in a legal way, like do some therapy, like do some ketamine therapy. It's a thing.
Here's the thing, though, Jade. You would not be upset if nobody intervened if you were Jude, because he clearly has no ability to experience any other emotion other than pain and sadness.
I suppose because he's not a real person. I don't necessarily think that he behaves as a real person does for so long. Actually, I did bring up the fact that he was 50 before anyone really intervened in a meaningful way. And I thought that was interesting because when I read the synopsis before getting into the book, because everybody who told me about this book warned me that I should probably read about the summary before getting into it, so I know what I'm getting into. And from my own conception of what I read in the summary, I thought this book was... I didn't know that it was going to span over the course of 3 decades. I thought he was going to end his life, you know, in his early 30s, the way that everything accelerated so fast. Like, the fact that this, it happened in his 50s, I felt really bad for him.
Yeah, he lived that long, just hating himself every day.
Just horrible. It's like reading 800 pages of a friend who is so caught up in their own self-loathing and you're just trying to like yell at them. It's not good.
No, it does not sound fun. But going back really quickly to the hurt comfort thing and what you mentioned about like the difference between like reading a hurt comfort fan fiction and reading A Little Life, is that, you know, you kind of know who the people are in fan fiction already. One of the things that stood out to me earlier when you were talking about what you liked about the book was how it explored relationships. And I guess that's maybe that's one of the few draws. Some of the other draws of reading Hurt Comfort fan fiction is that you're exploring how relationships, often romantic ones, but also platonic ones, are established and shift and change throughout a person's life, particularly in very vulnerable moments, and sometimes in really joyous ones as well. So I guess my question to you is, like, did it feel like fan fiction in that way? Like, when you read about these relationships, did it feel like you could root for this group of friends, or you can root for Jude's relationship with that one guy?
with Willem?
Willem from Dragon?
Yes. Almost. More so Willem Dafoe, with an E, not an A. That's a really good question, because I was talking about this specific point with another friend, and we were all talking about Willem, and my friend said Willem deserved so much better. So I honestly liked every other character in that friend group except for Jude.
Oh my God.
I thought they were all compelling characters, even when they acted like terrible people. I thought that made them more human in a way. They all still dealt with stuff. And I don't know. I thought the relationships were compelling. That's what I have to say about the book. I think the way that Hanya Yanagihara just depicts relationships between people and the deep love that you can have and affection that you have for somebody is very compelling. But I would say that the relationships depicted in Hurt Comfort fanfiction is more compelling, because those relationships are usually already established. And in the fanfiction, it's really just the author sort of imposing their own interpretation of the relationship in a novel way.
Mm. Okay, yeah. That's interesting.
So a question I think you asked me for a long time is that why did I think that critics at the time thought this was such, you know, a masterpiece of a book? And I don't think I ever had a good answer for you. My answer at the time was always that, you know, despite it being a difficult subject matter, it is an incredibly well-written book, and there are parts of it that are very compelling. Mm-hmm. And I think now I have another answer additional to that. Okay. And I'm going to try and present it as an analogy. And it's an analogy to what this book is to in the genre of fan fiction and also formal literary fiction. Okay, say you're a man from Sichuan, China, and you immigrate and you end up in, you know, a town in the middle of nowhere in Utah, and you open a Sichuanese restaurant, and your food isn't that good. Like, it's pretty good. Like, people will like it, but if you open this restaurant in Sichuan, you know, it will close within the year because the competition is way too high. Like, the food, like everything in Sichuan is so good, but in Utah, this is novel. This is exotic. Your restaurant, you know, like, people are raving about your cuisine because they'd never seen it before. Even though it's, you know, back in Sichuan, it's just fine. It's like a 3-star restaurant. This is what I feel a little life is to literary critics. If you read fan fiction, you know that it's not like the best addition to the Hurt Comfort genre. But if you don't know anything about that genre, you're going to think it's really great.
That is a really fair analysis. I like that analogy.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, so my invective to literary critics is that if you really want to, you know, grasp the vein of what young people are reading these days, you gotta read fan fiction. This is where... I genuinely think that this is where literature is headed. You have a lot of young people who are growing up on, fan-created transformative works. And they're growing, and fan fiction itself is its own literary language. There's a specific style. A lot of what we associate with fan fiction is like cringy, sexy Wattpad fic of Harry Styles, of One Direction, of the infamous fanfic where someone gets sold to One Direction comes to mind, and it's like raunchy porn, but. There's a lot more to fan fiction, and it is genuinely, and I'm saying all this stuff not to degrade fan fiction, but to uplift it. I think it is deserving in its own right a place, like in the pantheon of literature. And I think as a literary critic, you should really get into it.
Yeah, I definitely see where you're coming from with that. I think you shared with me something like a review of A Little Life last week or a few weeks ago, and we had this conversation about Hurt Comfort fan fiction, and I went home thinking to myself, like, if that is the case, if Yanagihara can win awards with something that feels so, I don't know, innovative and new to, mainstream literature critics, then what are we doing, kind of like as like a what is mainstream culture doing discussing like fan fiction in a way that is so often ageist and misogynistic? That kept coming up for me when I thought about our conversation that we had a few weeks ago. I feel like the final note that I want to talk about is about the villains of this book, because we've already established that Jude is not a person. He's not actually, sorry, that sounds super dehumanizing. Even though he's a
But it's
fictional
true.
character,
He's
but
literally not a person. He is a
exactly.
conglomeration of trauma. He is a cloud of trauma.
He's not a very believable character. And apparently neither are the people who abuse him, or not the people who harm him, but the people who like seriously like abuse and exploit him.
Yeah. I would say it's one of the characters is fairly believable in his abuse of Jude, but I would but a few of the other characters are so comically and pathologically over the top, it's hard to believe what they do to him, even though certainly something like this can happen in real life, which is kind of a weird contradiction. And another gripe I have with the book is that it's so believable, it lacks verisimilitude. It feels like fiction. It doesn't feel like this is something that is believable. Like it's like horseshoe theory, right? It's like it's so over the he's so believable that it's over the top. Whereas, I don't know, something like I'm going to talk about Dante. I'm going to talk about Dante's Inferno, where Dante allegedly says that everything that happened in this epic poem is actually true. He, describes his descent into hell and sees all these demons and sees a pope buried in hell in a spinning grave. And he does it in such a way that it leads to the audience to suspend disbelief, to actually believe in the things he says. He actually says in the poem, "Look at what I'm telling you. All I'm saying is true." And for some reason, through his writing, you can actually believe him. Whereas in this book, throughout the entirety of this book, I am just in complete disbelief. Even though a lot, everything that is described in the book rings true. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it definitely does. I remember in one of the conversations that we had about this, and especially about the villains and the pain and stuff, is that if you could compare it to like a different story that is also very much about like intense male trauma or something, you would still enjoy that story more than you would enjoy this one. And the one that you brought up was Farewell, My Concubine.
Farewell, My Concubine. Yeah. Which I didn't know you haven't seen it, so I completely spoiled everything for you.
I've read the Wikipedia page several
so
times.
The one of the main characters of Farewell, My Concubine also goes through pretty similar trauma. He was an incredibly impoverished child who was left to a Beijing opera performing troupe by his mother, and experienced a lot of abuse, including sexual abuse as a child, went through some incredibly difficult times, and this is all within the context of it spans decades, within the context of Chinese history, not modern Chinese history, from the 1920s, the 1910s to up to 1980, I would say. Maybe less, 1970. It ends at the end of the Cultural Revolution. And he just goes through so much. Oh, not only him, lots of the characters go through a lot. Very much emblematic of the time. And he ends up committing suicide. And what really worked for me is that a lot of the very intense trauma that is experienced by him is... there is that dot, dot, dot. There is that ellipses. You don't see it explicitly. It's left, it's implied, and it's left to the imagination. His abuse is not explicit, which I don't think it could be because it is a movie. I don't think that would have gotten past the censors. So there is that restriction there. And his suicide as well. You don't see his suicide, but the reaction to it. Or sorry, you don't see the act, but you see the reaction to the act, which, I don't know, I think it just worked for me.
Mm-hmm. I can see why that would feel more palatable, partly because it's not as emotionally intense. And as you said, like, if it were happening in film, it'd be like, oof, that'd be a lot. Possibly a lot more than like it happening in text in a book. I think the other thing that stands out to me with what you just said is that like there is almost like a kind of feeling of grace that one gives to the character and also the audience when they're writing about you know, scenes of abuse or of death that are really emotionally difficult. It might make it easier for folks to like digest. And I think to some extent also, it makes it easier for folks to like come back to and interrogate and to continue to engage with the experience of like having watched that film or having read like a less gritty, explicit book. Cause I wonder how many people have read a Little Life a Second Time who aren't critics.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I will, maybe in 5 years' time. I don't think I can do it anytime soon. I think if I read it again, I would just really be hate reading it.
Why would you want to put yourself through that? I don't know. I guess that's all I really feel like I'm interested in about this book and your thoughts. Do you have something else that you would like to comment on?
Yeah, it's really more of a question. I've been thinking about this a lot, especially in the context of this book. The question I have is that what makes a book good? What makes any book good is the fact that it solicits an emotional response from you, the fact that makes it good. And I asked this question because I saw a TikTok a while back where it was half joking, of course, but it was very much implying that a book is good if it makes you cry, which is like, that's an interesting metric. Is that really what makes a good book? Not necessarily cry, but it makes you emotional. What do you think makes a book good? Because that's something that I think I have difficulty conveying to others when I talk about this book, is that people ask me, did I like this book? Was it good? And I don't really know what to say. Did I like it? No. Was it good? I don't know.
That's a good question, because I think it's hard to make like an objective conclusion about like what is a good piece of art. And when I think about what makes a book good, I feel like I go back to like something that I sometimes like enjoy a little bit more, is like just looking at art. What makes like a piece of like, what makes like a painting good? What makes a design good? Is it the use of like skill, the type of, you know, intense emotion that is depicted in the painting? Is it the fact that elements of design have been used very strategically? And I think actually what it just comes down to is what does the book, or what does the painting do well? What can I appreciate about the painting? There are certainly, you know, I think about like, there are certainly paintings that I don't necessarily know if I like, if I'm like in love with the technique, or even that if I really love the way that it looks, but somehow it draws like an emotional response for me. There's stuff that I think that looks really ugly, but I can't deny that the skill is there. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's
how I feel about hyper-realistic paintings. I see those on TikTok all the time. I'm just like, I mean, it's great. I mean, like, obviously you have the technique, but I'm not getting anything from it. Like, you know?
Mm-hmm. So I think it's
hard.
A hard conclusion to draw, right? And as with art, writing being an art, you know, it is so subjective. I think it really just depends on what you personally value in that medium, or maybe within that genre, or let's say that writing style, or even just like what you weigh personally as being more important to you. Like, are you more drawn to writing if, or are you more drawn to like fiction if it's really well written, but let's say like the character arc goes nowhere? Are you really more drawn into fiction if there are really believable characters, but the plot like is just always stalemate? Like, it's a slice of life and it's kind of boring, right? So that's a good question. What are your thoughts? What makes a book? What makes a book good for you?
I don't know. I think a book is good if I feel anything other than misery. I'm thinking about that one phrase that people always say about good art or powerful art is that art or art, art, what art is supposed to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comforted, right? And I certainly think that A Little Life disturbs the comforted. I'm not sure if it comforts the disturbed.
Yeah.
And that's that. That's all I have to say about that.
Is there a fan fiction of A Little Life?
Oh my God, there's actually not that much. I was surprised. I thought there would be more. But there are some. There's maybe less than 100. A lot of them are fairly recent because the book has kind of made its way into TikTok recently. But I'm sure it's coming.
Man, I hope they're all domestic fluffy AU rewrites.
I'm sure they are.
Give Jude a personality, guys. Thanks for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 this week. I hope you enjoyed our discussion, one of our deep dives that we haven't really gotten to do very much recently, but it was a good time. Jade, are you going to continue to be tortured by A Little Life after we have had this session?
I think this is less of a deep dive than it is a therapy session for me. This is my debriefing session. So I truly hope that this book no longer troubles me.
I hope that you feel, you begin your journey of healing. For the listener, if you do decide to pick up A Little Life, I wish you good luck. And I hope you have folks to talk about it, about maybe a therapist, who knows. Tune in to more great CJSF programming by checking out Intravenous every Wednesday from 10 to 11, talking about all things, all genders. Intravenous, Wednesday from 10 to 11. My name is Leslie.
And I'm Jade.
Thank you for tuning in. Bye.
The worst part is you're innocent. And all of this, I was just calling quits. You were giving me all that I could need, I was missing it. Now I'm all alone, going through our old messages. And I'm getting it. Usually I'm the one getting burned, didn't realize I was hurting you. Oh God, I'm sorry. Such a cliche. Don't know what you have till it's gone away. But that'll take away any pain. I'm still here, sleeping in the bed I made, next to an empty space. Usually I'm the one getting burned, didn't realize I was hurting you. Oh God, I'm sorry, I put you through hell.
At CJSF, we would like to take this opportunity to learn about the importance and significance of Black History Month in Canada. Black Canadians and the communities have been a part of shaping Canada's heritage and identity since the early 1600s, yet their role has been disregarded for many years. This changed in December 1995 when the House of Commons officially recognized February as Black History Month in Canada. Years later, in February 2008, Donald Oliver, the first Black man appointed to the Senate, introduced the motion to recognize the contributions of Black Canadians in February as Black History Month.